Okay. Any questions about anything from before break? I forgot the papers. I have papers in my office that I don't think I turned everybody's back last Friday before break. So if you want, you can come to my office after class and I'll give you your paper if you didn't pick it up. Were there no questions about anything? Today's a fantastic lecture because this thing called Weyl's equidistribution theorem is a fantastic thing and has a fiendishly clever proof that's simple to give the main idea, and it's kind of a miracle that it works. And it uses all the tools we've been developing about Fourier series, so it's really a fantastic thing to do. It's not as maybe not as mind-blowing as the isoperimetric inequality, but it's pretty mind-blowing anyway. So if you ever played a board game as a kid, you know about spinning the needle and choosing things by spinning a needle. So for example, if I spin that needle, if I start it in a random place and flick it at a random strength, it's going to land in a random spot. And you would expect, if this is a fair spin the needle, that the number of hits, let's say I'll just pick the first quadrant just to make it something real. So the number of hits in, say, the first quadrant out of n spins . See, how many hits in the first quadrant out of n spins should I get?
Four.
Yeah, it should be a fourth of them. So, the number of hits in the first quadrant out of n spins divided by n, if this is a fair needle, should be approximately 1/4. And in fact, the bigger n is, the more close it should be. That's called being equidistributed. So in fact, this is like a way of measuring the size of that set of the first quadrant in the unit circle. And so, for example, if I'm thinking of that being the unit circle, the number of hits in an interval angle alpha to beta out of n divided by n, let's see, it should be the fraction of the whole circle that angle is. So it would be beta minus alpha divided by total 2 pi angle. That's what it means to be equidistributed. And when you're doing random things, you know, flicking thing at a random strength and from a random spot, you believe that that's the way needles act. But a big problem in math, especially if you're going to make machines do things that people can do, is to generate random numbers that do that. It's really hard to generate random numbers that do this. And this Weyl's equidistribution theorem is a very clever way of cooking up what are called pseudo-random numbers. So I'll state the theorem right now. The big theorem I want to do today is that if gamma, it's going to be an angle, is an irrational multiple of pi, then let's see. If I'm going to take numbers in the complex numbers in the unit circle, then e to the I n gamma. So I'm spinning it. I spin it around n multiples of gamma, and then plop it in the unit circle. So this is really I'm thinking here in terms of mod 2 pi addition. So, but the fact is, these are equidistributed. On the unit circle.
And let's see what that means. Let's see. I.e. the number of times e to the I n gamma falls in the interval from alpha to beta on the unit circle, so that's a sector out of n. So let's see, this would be n equals 1, 2 out of n divided by n tends to b minus a beta minus alpha over 2 pi as n goes to infinity. So these are pseudo-random numbers. Of course, you calculate them by a formula, but they act like random numbers. So if somebody said, you got to make me some numbers that people can't tell the difference from the numbers and a random number, this is the best way anybody knows how to do it, I think. Maybe there's fancier ways, but this way works. It's guaranteed to be pseudo-random and act like random. Let's see, I want to come up with some way of relating these to Fourier series. And it's I'm thinking of everything on the circle. I'm thinking of 2-pi periodic things when I do that. So let's see what I'm going to do. I'm going to cook up thing here. This is going to be the characteristic function for the interval. Sometimes I'll skip the alpha beta. This is going to be the characteristic function for the interval from alpha to beta. It's going to depend on the angle theta, and it's going to be equal to 1 if I'm in the interval and 0 otherwise. So let's see, if it's going to be 1 if I'm in the interval, that would mean that e to the I theta is in the set e to the I psi as psi ranges from alpha to beta. And it's going to be zero otherwise. So this characteristic function is 2 pi periodic. And it's 1 when I'm in the interval alpha to beta, and it's 0 outside. Okay. Another way to say that thing is equal to 1 if theta is in the interval alpha to beta modulo 2 pi. So I keep subtracting 2 pi until I get in the interval where I like, say minus pi to pi. And if it's in that interval, then I'm in. If it's not, I'm out. Stein writes some special notation for this that makes good sense, but I think I'll skip using his notation. I'm skipping using his notation by being on the unit circle. Stein does it 0 to 1 instead of minus pi to pi, but the unit circle makes sense because I like to think in terms of that spinner. So I can use this characteristic function of the interval as a counting function. So let's see, I should have called this thing up here, this counting function, I'm going to call this the rate that it falls in there. So I'll call that R sub n, the rate that lands in the interval of alpha to beta on the circle. So let's see, if I'm going to go back to the very beginning, the alpha to the beta thing would be here's an alpha, here's alpha, here's beta, and this would be alpha, this would be beta. And that interval is this interval here, alpha to beta. And I'm talking about when things land in there. So this would be where chi alpha to beta is equal to 1. And so I can count the number of times it falls in there in a very simple way in terms of that function. So that rate that it falls in there would be equal to 1 over n times the sum as n goes from 1 to n of chi of e to the I n gamma. These are the things I want to count. If they fall inside the set, this would give me a 1, spit me out a 1 here. If it doesn't fall in that set, it spits me out a 0. And so this is a way of counting them. And here's the brilliant thing Weil realized. If these things really are equidistributed, they're plopping down randomly in that interval. This looks like a Riemann sum, right? And if they're plopping down randomly, it's just a Riemann sum out of order. So the 1 over n is like a delta x, and this is like a Riemann sum. But see, it's not really a delta x. If I was going to make a delta x, I'd have to divide by, this would be n. This would be 2 pi divided by n. So I would multiply by 2 pi and divide by 1 over 2 pi. The 2 pi over n would be a delta x. And so I expect...
So the brilliant idea here is... I would take 2 pi times... No, 1 over 2 pi. 1 over 2 pi. 2 pi over n. This 2 pi over n looks, think, delta x. And the sum looks like a Riemann sum. And if it's equidistributed...
it's going to just be a Riemann sum that's out of order. And so Weil realized, if this thing is really going to work, this Rn should go to the integral. Let's see, though, is it going to be a 1 over 2 pi? Integral from minus pi to pi of chi d theta. And of course, that is what we want it to be. That's the characteristic function, beta minus alpha over 2 pi. That was his motivation. Okay, so that's the... we want to prove that for functions. I can't prove it for chi right away. I'm going to prove it for more elementary functions and see that it's going to work. So this is an important lemma. Let's suppose f... is continuous and 2 pi periodic. Then Weil's lemma here is that 1 over n times the sum as n goes from 1 to capital N of, let's see, f sampled at the points e to the I n gamma tends to 1 over 2 pi, integral from minus pi to pi, f of theta d theta, as n goes to infinity. That's going to give me my theorem, because I'm going to, well, let's see. This is for continuous functions. My characteristic function is not continuous. So I'll have to approximate it by continuous functions somehow and play games. But that game is easy. The hard part is this. And what's mind-blowing is how easy this lemma is. Let's see the proof. It's true for the basic Fourier series function. So step one, it's true for the Fourier series generating functions. And in fact, the only one that really has to be checked is the function 1. So let's see, let's check for f of theta, which is the function 1. Let's see, if I'm going to do it for 1, all those f's would be 1. And so I'd be adding up n 1's and dividing by n. So on the left-hand side, I would get 1. And on the right-hand side, I would get
an integral of 1, that would be 2 pi divided by 2 pi. So sure enough,
1 equals 1. So 1 over n summation is n goes from 1 to capital N. The function 1, this would be a sum of 1s. So that would be n. And the question is that equal to the integral from minus pi to pi, 1 over 2 pi, 1 d theta? It sure is. Check. And now I got to check it for the other trig polynomials. Let's check it for f of theta equals e to the I m theta. And this is just going to be a geometric series sum, and we're going to get 0 equals 0 on the right, because the integral, we're going to get, when we do this, we're going to get 0 equals 0. So on the left-hand side, I would get a sum, 1 over n times I'd get a 1 over n sum as n goes from 1 to n of e to the I m n theta, e to the I m n gamma. That's my sum of the, this is the f of e to the I n gamma. So what am I trying to say here? My functions.
I think it should be f of n gamma.
Yeah, that's what I should be doing. But it's 2 pi periodic. I'm copying my notes wrong here. This is going to be n gamma here. Okay, I'm sorry. Now it's making sense. And this is going to be n gamma. So this thing is periodic, remember. So I'm sticking n gamma into e to the I n theta. We can actually calculate this left-hand side because it's going to be like a geometric series. And so the question is, does this tend to 1 over 2 pi, integral from minus pi to pi, e to the I m theta d theta? Well, this is showing you that 1 is orthogonal to this. Because remember, these functions are orthogonal. And when m is not 0, these were all orthogonal to the function 1. Or you can calculate it using trig. So the right-hand side here is a big fat 0. So the only thing we really have to check is the function 1. It's the only time it's not 0. And that was a snap. So this is actually a geometric series on the left here. This is 1 over n times the sum as n goes from 1 to n of e to the I m gamma to the n. And remember, the sum of a geometric series, well, let's see, it starts from 1 instead of 0, so I have to factor out 1. This would be equal to, when I factor it out, e to the I m gamma times the sum as n goes from 0 to n minus 1 of e to the I m gamma to the n. That makes it start from 0. And so then I get here, when I look at it, I get e to the I m gamma. N is the thing that's moving. M is just a number. So that's a fixed thing. Divided by n. And the sum, remember, would be 1 minus e to the I m gamma times n plus, let's see, n plus 1, but this is n minus 1. So n minus 1 plus 1 is n. So that would take that to the nth power. And on the bottom is the r. 1 minus e to the I m gamma.
And remember, gamma is an irrational multiple of pi. So this thing is never 1. Because the only time you get this is if this is some multiple of 2 pi. So you might get really close, but you're never going to hit it and make this thing 0. And that's the key to making this work. You're never going to make the denominator 0, because gamma is the irrational multiple of pi. So that's just a number. And notice this 1 over n? That 1 over n makes this go to 0. This thing on top is bounded. It's spinning around the unit circle, so it certainly is bounded. This thing in the denominator is just a number. It might be gigantic, but it's just a number. And so as n goes to infinity, this thing, it wipes that thing out.
So the key to the whole thing is that the key, this denominator is not 0. For any m. And m is fixed. And so that thing is going to go to 0. Check.
Okay, so now we got it for 1 and all the other trig functions, and that means it's going to hold for
trig polynomials. So step 2, we checked it for the basic trig functions. The lemma holds for trig polynomials, because if you add two things up that it holds for, a finite sum of those things would also hold. So the lemma holds for trig polys.
And remember Fayer's theorem. Give me a continuous function, I can approximate it as close as you want by trig polynomials.
Okay, so step 3, let's suppose f is 2 pi periodic and continuous. Give me an epsilon bigger than 0. Fayer's tells me there's a trig polynomial. Is that how you spell Fayer's? Fayer's implies there's a trig polynomial. Let's call it P. With, I want it to be, let's see, it turns out I'm going to, that because of that 1 over 2 pi, I want my f, my given function f minus my trig polynomial to be less than epsilon over 3 times 1 over 2 pi. Okay. And now here's the this thing we.
The norm you're using here is just like for each individual value of x.
Right, so that's okay, you could call that the soup norm over.
Yeah, okay.
Over
yeah.
The circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that.
So if I was going to be on the circle, or I could say for all theta, because it's 2 pi periodic. Okay, so now let's just do it. One, I'm looking at this sum, f n gamma, minus 1 over 2 pi times this integral. And now I'm going to do the usual trick when you're using a step function or some other kind of function to approximate your function. You add and subtract it. And in this case, I'd have to add it and subtract it in multiple ways, multiple times. So let's just start doing it. I'll rewrite that first term. And now I'll subtract my trig polynomial here. So maybe I should put it in the color since I'm going to the adding and subtracting. So that's the black stuff's already there. And now I'm going to add, I'm going to subtract P here.
This is going to be small because these are close together. So this would be less than, these will all be less than epsilon over 3. And so I've got n of them, and they're all less than epsilon over 3. This is going to be less than epsilon over 3.
So that's going to be small. Then the next thing I have to do is add that red thing back. So I would have plus 1 over n, sum as n goes from 1 to n, p n that.
Okay, so I subtracted it and added it back.
And we know that for trig polynomials, those are close to the integral I want. So I'm going to subtract the integral I want minus the 1 over 2 pi. 1 over 2 pi integral from minus pi to pi of p of theta d theta.
So I'm sticking something in here that's close to this. If I stick it in there, I've got to add it back.
So I have to add it back, plus 1 over 2 pi integral from minus pi to pi p of theta. And now I'm going to have, I had my other function in there. This one, the black one, was there. So I'll put minus f of theta d theta.
Okay, so these two cancel each other, and the green ones cancel each other, and the black ones were already there. But the great thing is, it's like small, small, small.
Okay, so this one, when I take the modulus, the modulus of this one would be less than 1 over epsilon n times n times epsilon over 3. And that's epsilon over 3.
And you know those like 1 over 2 pi factor?
The 1 over 2 pi is less than, that's like 1/6, right? So it's even less, it's even more less than that. I just want this one to be less than epsilon over 3.
What was the point of the 2 pi?
You'll see it, it's going to come right here.
Okay.
See, this one's going to be less than epsilon over 3. I don't need that.
I don't need that stupid 2
pi.
I'm going to get it. Yeah, so I actually didn't need this 2 pi here at all. And now now I'm realizing why. Okay, so that one's lesson. And what's this one?
I can make, this is the one I know, this is a trig polynomial, and the lemma is true for trig polynomials. So if n is big enough, I can make this one less than n over 3.
So this one, the modulus will also be less than epsilon over 3 if n is big enough. So let's say if n is bigger than n naught.
And then finally, the last one,
I would estimate it'd be less than 1 over 2 pi times the max of p minus f on the circle times the length of the interval, 2 pi, and that's less than epsilon over 3.
So I've got 3 epsilons over 3. And that's a very standard argument in analysis that you know it's for, say, polynomials, then you approximate by polynomials and you get it for more general functions. Or you know it for step functions and you approximate by step functions. That's it.
So I get the whole thing is less than plus blah plus blah plus blah, and that's going to be less than 3 epsilons over 3s. Check. So we know the lemma for continuous functions. And now we're almost done. So the lemma is true for continuous functions. And what we do, we want to next show it's true for the characteristic function. So let me graph the characteristic function here. The characteristic, let's see, I'll make it blue. There's the characteristic function. This is gamma. I mean, not gamma, chi. And so the idea is I'm going to have something that's continuous that's bigger than or equal to chi, and something that's continuous and is less than or equal to chi. And it's going to be a really simple thing. So let's see. Here's the one that's bigger than or equal to. I'll go tent down like that, and then on top, this is equal. The red thing on top is equal. And then I'll go tent like this, and I'll make this little distance right here be epsilon. And of course, it's going to be 0 here and 0 here. I'm going to call that, that's going to be chi over. O for over. It's actually equal to 1 on the top there. And now chi under is going to be the same thing, except it's going to, let's see, it's going to be 0 over here, but it's going to go epsilon and then up. No, is that what I'm going to do? Oops, I don't want to go. I want to undo that. Edit. Undo. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go 0 until I get to alpha, and then I'm going to go up like a tent. And this little distance here is going to be epsilon. And then I'm going to stick under, I'm going to be 1 until I get to here, and then I'll do the same thing. And this little distance is going to be epsilon. And that's going to be gamma sub under. U is for under. These things are little parallelograms. Tilted. They have base epsilon and height. They have height 1, so they have area 1. It's pretty easy to figure out the integrals of those two things. But we know the lemma for the red and the green thing. So the lemma tells us, let's calculate here. Okay, so what do I know? I know that chi under is less than or equal to my characteristic function is less than or equal to chi over. And therefore, if I sum up my 1 over n, the sum as n goes from 1 to capital N, of chi under e to the I n gamma, it's going to be less than or equal to the same thing, the thing I want. And that's going to be less than or equal to the chi overs. But if I let n go to infinity, this one is going to tend to 1 over 2 pi, integral from minus pi to pi. This is the lemma. It's continuous, so no sweat. Chi under d mu. And chi under, if you look at it, let's see what it would be. There'd be, if you look at chi under, there's this little triangle missing in the integral. And the other half of that little triangle is over here. And so that's alpha minus beta, or beta minus alpha times the height, that's 1, minus the area of a rectangle of base epsilon. There's two halves of it there. So I claim that this one is equal to beta minus alpha minus epsilon. And this one over here is going to tend to the same thing, but with an over. This is a d theta.
Wait, that's a 1 over 2 pi.
What?
In the red, I think there should be like 1 over
2 pi. Oh, yeah. That's what I want it to be. So this is going to be divided by 2 pi. And this one, if you look at it, you've got the beta minus alpha plus too much by epsilon. Go back and look at that one. Let's see.
Let's see. You'd have this thing, this square, this rectangle, which is beta minus alpha times height 1. And then you'd have, here's half of a triangle, a base epsilon in height 1. And here's the other half of it. So you'd get a rectangle base epsilon in height 1 extra.
That gives you the plus epsilon.
And notice that those are squeezed in there. And so now I can let the epsilon go to 0, and I get see that my my thing in the middle
gets squeezed in. And that's what the equidistribution theorem was all about. So finally, let epsilon go to 0. To see the limit we want. So we see that 1 over n times the sum as n goes from 1 to capital N of my chi e to the I n gamma tends to beta minus alpha over 2 pi. And that's the equidistribution theorem.
By the way, we've shown it for continuous functions. And now we use that to show it for this step function, the basic step function, which means our lemma holds for step functions now.
So if you're going to play around and make a bigger lecture out of this, so we're done with the good stuff. But if we wanted to continue, we would think the theorem, the lemma holds for step functions now. That's what I just showed.
And that, you know, if you're going to study much in the way of integration, step functions are how you build up, say, measurable functions. But certainly you can build up, you can get close to Riemann integrable functions with step functions. And we needed to get close in an integral sense. And that's exactly what you do with Riemann integrals. You would approximate a Riemann integrable function by the things that are step functions that are slightly underneath and the step functions that are slightly over. And you know, but if it's Riemann integral, those things squeeze down to each other and give you, in the limit, they would give you the Riemann integral. And so that I'm not going to do that argument, but I could continue the argument,
the same reasoning, to see, and Stein does it. The lemma holds for Riemann integrable functions. And so, you know, on a Riemann integrable function, you'd have a function like this. It doesn't have to be continuous, but you'd approximate by step functions that are equal to the minimums on each interval. So I'd cut it up in intervals like this. And I'd do that same argument I just did. I'd have the min on each interval. Here's the min here, kind of turned out too nice. And then you'd have the max on each interval. Those would be step functions for which you know the theorem. And if it's Riemann integrable, the area of these little boxes I'm penciling in now would add up to something that goes to 0. And you'd be able to show that the lemma holds for, you'd squeeze it in from underneath and above, and you'd squeeze it exactly like I did with those two over and under functions. And it wouldn't be hard. But I won't do that. Another thing you can do is deduce Weyl's criterion. Let's see, I should tell you, there's different Weyls. Weyl is Hermann Weyl. He was German. He was a refugee from Nazi Germany and ended up at the Institute for Advanced Study. He wasn't terribly happy there. But that's where he ended up, hanging around Einstein. And the other famous guy that looks like a Weyl is André Weyl. This one is Weyl, and this one is Vey. He's French. André, how do you spell André? I don't know how to spell André. Maybe it's this André. André Vey. This would be like Weyl. How do you spell Weyl? And this would be like Vey. And there's something called Weyl's criterion. Which is neat. If you go back and look at the proof, you realize that the important thing was that geometric series sum thing. And so if you have a sequence of angles, like your spinner, so the theta n's is a sequence of angles, that's going to be equidistributed. In the circle, if and only if my lemma, remember I did my lemma, and the key step was that if I did it for Fourier functions, it was going to work. Let's see, and the Fourier functions would it be e to the I m times theta n. That needs to tend to zero as n goes to infinity
for each of the m's. This would be, we're doing this for the functions e to the I m theta, and I'm sticking the theta n's in there.
For each m.
That was really the only place in the proof where I had to check something. That's where I only used the special property of the function, the fact that it was an irrational multiple of pi. But if you start with that, it gives you that chunk of the lemma, and you can continue. So that's how you can test if you've got yourself an equidistributed sequence. Oh, by the way, I didn't draw the picture about what happens when it's a rational multiple of pi.
I should have done that in the first frame. What if gamma?
By the way, if you're going to make a pseudo-random numbers, there's no such thing as an irrational number when you're doing computers. So, but the best you can do is get something that feels like it's irrational, right? So you just find the biggest prime you can get. And multiply, yeah, so the biggest prime anybody ever got would be as close to being irrational as you could be, and you multiply pi by it, and then mod out and put it back in the interval, and that would feel pretty random. So having a great big prime number is important for this process.
So I wanted to say, what if gamma is a rational multiple of pi? Then, as you go around and around the unit circle, what if it was pi over 4, for example, I'd get these spots, and then I'd come around and repeat.
And that's all I would get. So if this is 1/4, And if it was 1/8 pi, I'd put another dot in the middle of each one of these. And so you see, if it's a rational multiply, it gets to be periodic, and you miss a whole bunch of intervals. So for example, this one would never ever hit anything in this interval at all. So it doesn't make any sense when you've got a rational multiple of pi.
And if you look in Stein, he starts taking this to new levels. The billiard problem. Let's see, here's a pool table.
If you shoot a pool ball and it's just right, it would come back and bounce around and come back and be periodic. Right? You'd have to think about how you could make that happen. I think it has something to do with an irrational multiple of this angle. But if it's a rational multiple of pi, you'd come back and eventually it would be periodic and you'd repeat the thing. You'd have to hit the thing really hard. But if it's an irrational multiple of pi angle, you bounce around and you'd never come back and it would fill the whole space. And in fact, it would be equidistributed in terms of area. The amount of time it would spend in any box out of the total time would be the area of that little box. Question?
Is that ergodicity?
Yes, it has to do with that. So that if you start thinking about this in a more deep level, and there's billiard problems for things that aren't rectangles. They're pretty interesting. If you have a curve and you know what it means to bounce off, like reflection off the edges, you can ask the same kind of questions. And they get pretty interesting. So there's lots of open questions about the billiard problem. And so this thing in the circle is the basic thing to know before you start studying the more general things. But it's kind of fun.
Oh, good, I'm out of time almost. So next time I'm going to start Fourier integrals, which are fascinating things, and it's sort of a whole different flavor from series. They're highly related, but it's going to feel like a whole new subject. I think I'll spend some time motivating it with some historical example next time, but that's the plan for next. So I think I've finished everything I'm going to do in Chapter 4, and the Fourier integral starts in Chapter 5. So I'll put a reading assignment on the homepage.
Can you read the part of Chapter 4, like about the everywhere continuous?
Are you interested in that? That's fun.
Are we covering it in class?
I haven't done it. No, I was going to skip that.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's cool stuff.
Yeah.
If I have time at the end, maybe I'll talk about that. I like to do it from the point of view of bare category. And you can convince yourself that most functions are nowhere differentiable when you're dealing with continuous functions. Okay. If you wanted your paper back and you didn't get it before break, I have it in my office. You can follow me up there.
I have class right now. Is it possible to take it on Wednesday?
Your paper?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll bring it to class.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, okay. Do you know what it says? I asked my guy if he also keeps standard.